It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You're all right.
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
If you want to be a drag queen and your parents don't let you, you need new parents.
In His Image, delighting in God's plan for gender and sexuality is coming soon. And you have an opportunity to preview this movie from American Family Studios on August 1st.
The issues are unavoidable. They're on the news.
I did not have a chance to comment on how good the White House looked in rainbow colors.
The preview will feature testimonies from former LGBT individuals.
My dad walked in the door and he said, Denise, I want to become a woman.
And a behind-the-scenes look at the spiritual warfare waged during the making of this documentary.
There will be protests and objections to us talking about this topic.
The powers of darkness do not want truth to go out.
For the last year and a half, we have met and prayed specifically over this project.
Visit inhisimage.movie to register for the free sneak preview coming August 1st. That's inhisimage.movie.
And you are made in the image of God.
Sandy Rios with you on this Friday. We've been talking about this movie all week, and that's not that's just in part our topic today. So that movie is so powerful. It features a former homosexual. You heard the voice of a daughter of a transgender father just a few minutes ago, a former transgender female and a former transgender male, Walt Heyer, who I know personally. It's a powerful movie, and we are offering that to you if you'd like to get a sneak preview of it tomorrow. I think it's tomorrow, August the 1st. You go to inhisimage.movie, and sign up. And so that's how that happens. It's In His Image, and you can spread the word because heaven knows, given all the censorship around us, you won't be hearing much about this in any other place or any other fashion. American Family Association has for so long since Don Wildman founded us so many years ago, been on the front lines of the culture war, taking uncompromising biblical positions. Obviously, there are opinions that can be compromised on. You can have different opinions on things, but some things are true and immutable, and one of those is our gender. But it has become such a controversial thing, and people are so lack the courage to have these discussions. But American Family Association is drawing a line in the sand, and we have produced this film, which will no doubt bring tremendous controversy. And so that's kind of really what I want to talk about today, apart from I do want you to watch the movie because it's powerful, it'll be life-changing, and it will be helpful to your friends and family as they try to navigate. But this kind of a movie or this kind of a stand comes with tremendous risk, and that's why I've asked Ed Vitagliano to join us this morning. Ed is the Executive Vice President for the American Family Association. Ed, thank you for joining us this morning.
Oh, it's great to be with you, Sandy. Thank you.
Ed, you know, since I've been with the American Family Association, you've been with them a lot longer than I have. I have experienced the attack, the listing of us as a hate group by the Southern Poverty Law Center, the SPLC, which has had its own effect in terms of funding and all of that. So that's been one major attack, and maybe there are others I don't know about, but there's one that's current, and it's something that is actually quite serious. And I've asked you to join me this morning to talk about what I'm not sure anybody's heard about this except for our listeners. So what has happened recently within the last year or year and a half by way of a threat to the American Family Association?
Yeah, well, on May 22nd of last year, so 2019, a young man named Chase Davis lives in Pompano Beach, Florida. He posted a pair of threatening messages on the AFA Facebook page. And I'd like to read the messages because this is important when we get to the subject of things like Facebook. This is what Chase Davis wrote. He said, "I am coming to Tupelo unexpected with a group of people, and we are going to kill every single person who runs your group. And he also said, "You are the most disgusting people in America. I have put together a group to have you pieces of expletive there obliterated into dust. Yes, I literally mean killing all of you. You people are nothing but disgusting, worn out, and old excuses of human life." So that was the pair of threats that he wrote on AFA's Facebook page. So we obviously took a couple of immediate steps. We reported the criminal threats to the United States Attorney's Office. That resulted in an investigation by the FBI and a federal grand jury indictment. And Chase Davis was convicted and is now serving time for that pair of threats. We also...
And by the way, could I just say that just happened recently? That happened in July of this year.
July 20th.
Ago.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So he has since been sentenced to 6 months. And what else?
Yes. That will be followed by an additional 3 years of federal probation. And our sources told us that he will be strictly monitored and supervised by federal authorities. And he was ordered to pay restitution costs. Because we had to hire off-duty police officers. I mean, this campus was seriously on edge for the remainder of the month of May and into June of last year because we didn't know whether or not Chase Davis and his friends, whatever he said he had, were going to come to Tupelo and open fire on us. And so we had to hire off-duty police officers. We put on all kinds of made all kinds of changes to the campus for increased security. So he will pay some of the restitution costs, and then he must also – Chase Davis, listen, I want your listeners to know we don't hate this young man. We are encouraging people to pray for him. He has a lot of problems, a lot of issues, and he needs the love of Jesus in his life. So he'll also be participating in drug and mental health treatment and perform 400 hours of community service.
All right, so Chase has – the federal authorities took this seriously.
Yes.
And they put him behind bars. But he posted this on Facebook, this threat that you just read.
Right.
"I'm coming to Tupelo unexpected with a group of people. We're going to kill every single person who runs your group." That is a specific, dangerous threat. You reported that to Facebook. And what happened?
Yeah, Jim Shepherd, who's our chief information officer, there's a place you can go on Facebook to report violations of their policy. So we brought these threats to the attention of Facebook, and were told very, very quickly. I mean, they didn't take a week or 2 weeks to think about this. They said that the threat was not a violation of their policy. Now, remember, Chase Davis threatened to come and kill everyone on our campus. And Facebook said that does not violate our policy. We appealed the decision. You can't appeal it. And Facebook sent us the same answer, that it doesn't violate their policy, which was mind-blowing, you know, back in 2019. And now we see Facebook bouncing people for far, far less. And it's just staggering, the kind of hypocrisy that we find on Facebook.
So, Ed, when this threat happened, when it was fresher last year, it still hits me, man. It's just, it just makes you very sober when you read something like that. So, how did the staff respond to that? And were they aware of this threat?
Oh yes, we immediately made the staff aware. We, you know, their safety was uppermost in our minds. We made physical changes to the campus. We also we do have a security team that is armed, and they are trained, and we put them through additional training. Just in terms of hearing from staff members, several went and got their concealed carry license so that they could, you know, it's how crazy is that? They had to, you know, these people felt like in order to protect themselves, working at a ministry, they had to go get their concealed carry license. So, yeah, we let our staff know about everything that was going on. And, of course, we let them know when Chase Davis was finally convicted and sentenced, which was on July 20th.
So with Facebook, we use Facebook. You know, I use Facebook. All of our accounts are on Facebook. maybe it's time to do something different or at least expand our horizons in social media to some other outlet. Because I actually, Ed, this is like the beginning of them shutting us down completely. And we're seeing more and more of that. I'm going to talk about that today as the show develops, all the ways that they are just silencing other voices. And the threats are getting so real. It's not just to us. I just played this week a C-SPAN clip of a caller on the Democratic line who called in to say, Did y'all know that a Trump supporter was just shot point blank in Milwaukee? And I did know that because I reported it. He was a black supporter and he has a store and he was standing out. I've seen the video of him talking about trying to reason with people about why they should support President Trump. And this caller was saying, did you know that this Trump supporter was killed? But the caller was not sorry. He followed it by saying, in Milwaukee, we have guns, and we are just waiting for people to come up here and resist, and there's going to be killing. That was the dialogue on C-SPAN, Ed.
I heard your show when you aired that. I had not seen that clip. So all of us are learning when we listen to Sandy Rios in the morning. I keep using the same words. I was stunned by that because the hosts – only one of them spoke up about that. The other one, the one who answers the Democrat line, he just, on to the next caller.
Yeah, no big deal. Business as usual. I think the point I'm trying to make is that any viewpoint that is not the accepted viewpoint, and by the way, that viewpoint's going to change and shift. It's we're all going to be expected to follow, you know, the viewpoints very carefully. It's the way it has always been in totalitarian societies. They're going to be in great danger. And now we're talking about violence, which most of us knew was going to turn to that. But, Ed, let me ask you, as the executive vice president of the American Family Association, what will this do to our coverage, our positions on the issues? Are we going to moderate things in any way?
No, because as you mentioned, and as you played the clip from In His Image, the truth is important. God is a God of truth. Those who know the Lord have the Holy Spirit, who is the Spirit of truth. You don't ever get anywhere by hiding the truth. We're called to be salt and light. And you know what? American Christians are starting to learn that having your faith and treating it seriously and clinging to Jesus sometimes costs. Christians in other places around the world have known this their whole lives. We know it theoretically because we read about it in the Bible. But every Christian in the coming years is going to have to make this decision. You know, just the subject of the transgender movement. There are going to be Christians who are going to be kicked out of their families, for want of a better expression, treated as pariahs because they hold to the truth. So, no, we're not going to moderate our position because we can't depart from the truth. It is not loving your neighbor to hide the truth from them, and sometimes this comes at a cost.
Yes, boy, that's true. And we just didn't know we were so close to having to pay that cost, Ed. And so that's an adjustment for all of us. It's again been theoretical, as you said, for so many years. We've followed the people, our brothers and sisters in Russia, then China, and other, you know, North Korea, who've been, and the Middle East, who've been paying the ultimate price. But now, you know, it is coming closer to home. We knew it would, and so God told us it was going to happen, I think, Ed. Maybe not, he didn't say America, but he said that we would pay the ultimate price, and we must be willing. He who would, you know, give up his life will find it.
Right.
So that's what we're doing. Ed Battagliano, thank you so much for your great leadership.
Absolutely.
Of AFA,
Sandy,
Ed.
Thank you.
Appreciate it so much. God bless you, and I'll talk to you soon. All right, Sandy Rios. By the way, we're talking to Dan Gaynor at Media Research Center in the next segment, because Google and Facebook have been up to no good, and you need to know about each and every bit of it. Sandy Rios in the morning.
Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
For Republicans nationwide this week are once again feeling the heat from the United States' biggest tech companies. Senate Republican Tom Cotton censored by Twitter.
You do have left-wing thought police.
Far-right financial blog Zero Hedge banned from Google ads. And conservative outlet The Federalist also under threat from Google, which plan to block the site over offensive comments not from the outlet's journalists, but its readers.
It is a curious time for big tech to be threatening to deplatform websites because of uncurated comments at a time when big tech may be facing the loss or at least the modification of its legal liability protections because they claim they don't curate their comments.
Google insists they follow the same rules of the road they set for everyone else and that those rules are crystal clear. We do have strict publisher policies that govern the content ads can run on, which includes comments on the site. This is a long-standing policy. This feud comes fresh on the heels of Twitter's clash with President Trump over its decision to slap warning labels on his feed for inciting violence. Republican lawmakers say big tech's longtime crusade against conservative speech has now become dangerous. The Justice Department is taking action, saying it's reconsidering Section 230 of the Communications Decency Act, which protects tech firms from lawsuits by users. And a group of Senate heavyweights, including Josh Hawley, are pushing a legislative fix that would allow users to sue when they believe political speech is censored.
It's really simple. If you're treated unfairly and big tech violates their own terms of service, then you can sue and you can have your day in court.
Democrats, for their part, have been mostly silent on this issue this week. It's a fight they don't seem eager to have with their GOP colleagues. Google says both the Federalist and Zero Hedge's comments section contains what they call derogatory racial information, which is not allowed. As of now, all offending comments have been removed from the Federalist site, but this fight is just heating up.
All right, Jillian Turner from Fox brought us that a few weeks ago. That's not a new report. And it's needless to say, I have talked about tech censorship repeatedly for the last, as long as I've been on the air here. And this week, though, you would have to say the burner has been turned up big time. The burner not only for tech companies censoring conservatives or speech that they don't want heard, the counter to that is there were hearings on Capitol Hill this past Wednesday in this effort to bring social media and these big tech giants to account. Dan Gaynor is the Vice President of Tech Watch and Culture at Media Research Center. And Dan is following this. He's probably one of the most knowledgeable people, I think, in the country about what's happening with these big social media companies right now. And so, Dan, thanks for joining us this morning.
Well, it's a pleasure.
Dan, since we last spoke, and it hasn't been that long ago, things have just gotten worse, don't you think?
Well, they absolutely have, and there's a reason for it. We're getting closer to an election, and big tech is putting its chips on the table, and they've picked a side. And that means companies like Google and YouTube and Twitter, which are more obviously on the left, and companies like Facebook that are facing both external pressure and internal pressure from its woke employees, they're being dragged to the left faster than I think they really want to go, but they're still going there.
One example that I think people can really relate to before we jump into so many other examples is something that happened just this week that I covered a lot, Dan, and that was there was a press conference and a seminar, really, I guess you could call it, by a group called America's Frontline Doctors. They were convened by Dr. Simone Gold. She's a board-certified doctor and attorney. It's all medical doctors from all over the country. They were black, they were white, and they presented what they feel is the truth about what's happening with COVID. They talked about a lot of information that Americans are not hearing because it isn't the party line. It isn't the Dr. Fauci line, as it were. And so they presented this. Tea Party Patriots organized it. They did a press conference in front of the Supreme Court. It was very powerful. I watched a lot of it. And it, so Breitbart covered it live, Facebook and Facebook Live. I think there were other outlets that did the same, large outlets. And it was, millions of people were watching. But now, lo and behold, since that happened, Facebook took down the press conference. So did YouTube, which is owned by Google. So did Facebook. And then last but not least, Twitter actually started censoring President Trump's retweeting of this event. Also, Don Jr., I just heard Don Jr., his Twitter account was, his tweets about this were taken down too. We are not allowed to have any alternative views on COVID-19. Just a word about how dangerous that is, Dane. Dan?
I mean, first of all, Don Jr. is actually suspended, I believe, in general for this.
You might be right. Yes, okay.
So I mean, what's happening here is the people with big tech are deciding that they are the medical authorities on everything, that their view outright outranks the view of other people. And, you know, that's just terrifyingly dangerous. The concept of science and the whole scientific method is based on challenge. Everybody, I really want you to think back to grade school and high school science classes. The idea of experiment is, I've got a hypothesis. I think that I could make tin burn with a match. Okay, well, you can't, I don't believe, but nevertheless, that's your hypothesis. Well, then you test it. If you can make tin burn with a match, that's your proof. But then other people need to be able to prove that as well. They need to challenge your supposition. That's what this is all based on. So by eliminating our ability to question science and question medicine, we eliminate thousands of years of technological and medical advances. I mean, that's how all this stuff happened, how polio ended up, we got better cures for polio because people questioned the existing treatments, and how lots of other medical things. So now we're, as a world, continue to face a COVID crisis. We saw, with baseball players suddenly, getting the virus. And so doctors have a public event, and it gets covered by the press. And suddenly it's silenced. Now, I would say one of the reasons why, the big reason they silenced it allegedly is because they said that hydroxychloroquine, and please don't make me say that again, was a cure. It's not. It's a treatment. But, are you going to silence everything that you disagree with or you think might be technically wrong and just eliminate it? Who gave them that kind of power?
Well, interesting, isn't it, Dan, interesting that President Trump was accused of practicing medicine because he was promoting hydroxychloroquine? And now it looks as though big social media companies are now themselves practicing medicine. And since I watched that part of the doctor's briefing on this, I know that they said that hydroxychloroquine has been tremendously effective not only in the treatment, but also the prevention. And I actually heard this from they're not a unique group. I've heard this from tons of doctors. And now what we have is a situation where the powers that be, the Dr. Fauci's of this world, have declared that hydroxychloroquine is not an effective treatment. And now pharmacists, even if doctors order it, are not allowed to fill prescriptions for hydroxychloroquine. And two more points, because I think they're important. The doctors cited the New England Journal of Medicine, and I think it's Lancet. Those are two have been highly respected research medical journals that do all kinds of stuff that informs medical doctors about what's good and what isn't. And they both published studies saying hydroxychloroquine was bad, and they both had to retract them because in their studies they had given inordinate amounts of hydroxychloroquine to at-risk patients. And so those were taken off. So my point would be what yours is, that let's hear what people have to say about this, for heaven's sake. And the fact that they have removed these videos is very troubling. I want to play something for you that you might not have even heard yet, Dan, as up to date as you are, because this just came in my inbox. Twitter, which suspended, as you pointed out, Donald Trump Jr.'s account for retweeting this, and also blocked out President Trump's tweets on this press conference, did not block this out. This was an interaction now after the doctors met on ABC with Dr. Fauci, just right after the doctors had their press conference. Let's listen.
Noting the effectiveness of hydroxychloroquine, we know the FDA has recommended against emergency use.
Right. Right, exactly. And I go along with the FDA. The overwhelming prevailing clinical trials that have looked at the efficacy of hydroxychloroquine have indicated that it is not effective in coronavirus disease.
All right, so I'm not going to argue about hydroxychloroquine, but the point is, Dan, Twitter is censoring people that doctors who say, no, it's actually very effective, and allowing Dr. Fauci to say what he just said to George Stephanopoulos.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's a mixture of two awful, terrifying things. It is these major social media sites embracing groupthink and silencing anybody that dares disagree, and then embracing that, you know, the concept that medicine only has one solution, is one size fits all. I'm going to say, without going into detail, I have a minor medical problem, and you know, I take an off market use for a drug. Now, technically, it's not an approved use, and my insurance listening right now, they probably say, "Oh, well, that's it. You're going to pay for it." but it's prescribed by my doctor, and it works. That's the beauty of it. It works. My doctor's an expert, and it works. Not everybody is the same. Not every treatment is. You know, a lot of things are evolving, and people investigate them, and that's how you figure all this stuff out. And the idea that medicine is just this, you know, linear concept is just flat out historically inaccurate and dangerous. And it's dangerous that a handful of super powerful monopolies of information have the ability to silence thought, and they're doing so the day before there's a hearing about antitrust. It's absolutely audacious. I mean, it's just, you know, there's no, they think that nobody can tell them what to do.
It's really shocking, and that's exactly the point of our discussion. In fact, since you mentioned the hearing, we should at least, let me just say that when Dan and I are taping this, the hearing has not taken place. By the time you hear us talking, it will have been past tense, so there's much about it that we won't know. But as it's scheduled, what is this hearing all about, Dan? And what does this have to do with what we're talking about, the censorship?
Well, the hearing's about antitrust because, obviously, you know, some of these companies are so epically powerful. There are four companies who are going to be there, and that's Google, Apple, Amazon, and Facebook. So, let's look at Google controls 92% of the search, not in the United States, in the entire world, if you search for something. So we saw last week when Google delisted prominent conservatives, including four at the MRC, we simply disappeared from search. That's it. You couldn't find us. You could find articles about us, and it showed that there were millions of links out there somewhere in the ether about us, but they just flipped the switch and we ceased to exist. They claimed it was a technical error. But should any company on earth have the power to just flip a switch and make you disappear to 92% of the global population?
That's
something Orwell would never have even dreamed of.
So it's
talking about their level of power. Amazon, which was already a superpower before the virus, is now massively much more so, and probably partially because I have a bunch of Amazon boxes in my house right now. You know, I'm probably part of that too. Probably you are as well. Probably everybody listening. Oh, we ordered for Amazon because we knew we could get it. And then there's Apple, which is, you know, very influential, controlling the Apple App Store, and Facebook, which has access to close to 3 billion customers in the world. These are the most powerful companies in human history. And I say this as a history buff. Remember, at one point, the British East India Company was so powerful, it had, you know, a military attachment to it. I mean, it took over part of India. And these companies are massively more powerful than that. They can, and they're doing so, influence elections so that we'll never have another free election.
In fact, no one in the globe will ever have another free election. And we have,
absolutely.
We have people
unless you close off your country, block big tech entirely from your country, you'll never have big tech can decide whoever wins any election in any country in the world.
Dan, isn't it ironic that China, you know, was the one that gave Google a hard time about their platform? And so Google, that's just one country. I know it's a big one, but it's one country among the universe of countries. And they caved to China and have made Google more Google. For China, who doesn't have free and fair elections, they conformed to their restrictionist censorship. That's what they're doing now to the rest of the world. It really is such an irony. We have to talk about that. Dan Gaynor is my guest. And, of course, Dan is the vice president of Tech Watch and Culture at the Media Research Center. By the way, Media Research Center is overseeing, under Brett Rozelle, this group that's trying to do the best that we can. AFA is part of it, to sort of monitor this and to confront these companies. And we'll talk more about that. A recent letter just went out. We'll talk about that when we return. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
Facebook also holds its users accountable by continuing to monitor and flag posts for harmful misinformation about the disease.
How do you deal with the fact that Facebook is now being used to organize a lot of these protests to defy social distancing, defy the social distancing guidelines in states? With somebody trying to organize something like that, does that qualify as harmful information?
We do classify that as harmful misinformation, and we take that down. At the same time, you know, it's important that people can debate policies, so there's a line on this. But, you know, more than normal political discourse, I think a lot of the stuff that people are saying that is false around a health emergency like this can be classified as harmful misinformation.
That's Mark Zuckerberg with George Stephanopoulos. Harmful misinformation. That sounds so much like the Soviet Union to me. Disinformation. We can't allow this kind of information. It's the way they handled and managed their propaganda. Sandy Rios back with you with Dan Gaynor from Media Research Center. Dan, let's talk about Facebook for a second, because they, of course, are in lockstep with Google, it seems to me. And yet, it wasn't that long ago we were sitting in their offices trying to reason with them, and we thought we had made some headway. What happened?
Well, I mean, what happened was a combination of things. One, the left and the media went to war with Facebook. I mean, really went to war. And they've organized it, boycotted it. The last tally had something like 1,200 major companies that won't advertise on Facebook. And they've also organized employees inside Facebook. Remember, all these big tech companies, and the executives have mentioned this, hire from Silicon Valley. That means they hire lefties. And they've got a core group of people at Facebook who started rebelling. So Facebook is trying to keep its company going. At the same time, you know, cave slowly. But it also notice, you know, Facebook doesn't want to be involved in all this. And I don't blame them. It's not their, you know, it's not a business model to determine what content is legit and what isn't, because it's just too complicated. So what they really want is regulation. They want regulation to say, see, this government says we must do this. Well, we're doing it. We're just obeying the rules, which is why they shut down certain events. If a local government says, oh, you can't have that event, well, then Facebook's more than happy to obey that, because they want to be out of the decision world. You look, they've farmed out both fact-checking and now this oversight board to outside organizations. They want to be out of this world. They just want to print money. And so the left, which is massively better at protest and boycott and harassment of companies, that's what they've done. And the major media have helped them. There's no organization in America that has helped the boycotters more than CNN. If you're not boycotting, Facebook, they write stories about you. Like, well, Dan Gaynor's company is not boycotting Facebook. Why is that?
So, but would you say, also, you're talking about the leadership of Facebook. You're not talking about the employees who I think are happy to censor. In fact, would it be a stretch, Dan, to say that what we're seeing on the streets in Portland and Seattle and the attitudes that are being expressed by the younger people on those streets about their view of this country and their view of the world in general, about, you know, not you're not able to say that, that offends me, et cetera, safe spaces, you know, all of the nonsense we hear out of colleges and universities would exemplify attitudes of employees at Facebook out in the northwest part of this country?
Well, I think it's not just Facebook. I think it's big tech in general. I think it's media right. in general. This idea of turning the world into a global safe space, the idea of, you know, one big college campus. You look at polling, the First Amendment doesn't do well anymore. The left doesn't believe in it at all. We were raised in an era where Nat Hentoff and people talked about more speech is better speech, and now the left believes in censorship is better speech. You don't have any right to say anything that we disagree with. If it offends me, you have to be silent. And that bear in mind, that includes religion. It's not just political speech they want to silence. They want to silence religious speech. Remember, you know, it hasn't been that long ago we saw one of the Black Lives Matter leaders talking about tearing down images in churches that reflect a white Jesus.
Oh, I remember that. And I was just thinking, again, another irony. It wasn't that long ago, Dan, when I was trying to explain, I know you have been too, what the European speech codes, the effect of them on the social media. Oh, this thing seems so quaint now. I think that people couldn't probably comprehend what we were saying was coming because these platforms were still, it seemed as though they were still free and an open exchange of ideas. But now I don't think we really have to convince people that they are out and out censoring conservative speech. I interviewed a Facebook whistleblower about a month, maybe 6 weeks ago. The one that was exposed through James O'Keefe. And he told me that at this point, he's estimating that at least maybe, I believe he said 75-76% of conservative content is already being censored. But we don't know it because, of course, we don't know, especially on Facebook, what's not being seen once we post it.
Yeah, because one of the things that may come up tomorrow is the idea of algorithmic transparency, which sounds like a mouthful. It's just basically that outsiders get to see the code that they use to control everything about these websites. So we saw during the recent hack on Twitter that what happened was they revealed that Twitter apparently has the ability to shut down certain content, certain threads, restrict certain content, and it's like baked into their system. So, and this is not surprising to those who's on Twitter, Dave Rubin made a point last night. If you were looking, something ridiculous was trending, and it had like a couple hundred retweets, and that's it. It was trending on Twitter. And his comment was he could make an image of Pooh and Alf get that many retweets. He said it won't trend on Twitter. And so he posted that, and I'm sure it managed to make that, because, you know, that's Twitter. That's one of the many ways in which they fix the agenda.
Yeah, I think that takes us back to Google, because I think it's always hard to explain that when we do a search, somebody or something has to determine what we see when we're looking for an article on this or that. And what's happening, just to make it simple, is that even though Google claimed that they were neutral, arbiter, they are not. And they have programmed their algorithms, and I think actually manually, too. I think you would agree with that, Dan. They have figured out how to mess with what comes up. And that's what you're talking about. When you say MRC, three of your outlets or platforms won't come up on Google, will they now? Have they heard your complaint?
Yeah, they were shut down for about half a day. But I mean, think about that. So here, let's assume Google's telling the truth, which we don't, by the way. We don't believe it. That my boss sent him a scathing letter. But
I signed that letter.
They're telling the truth. How is it that a company can have the power to just flip a switch and shut down much of the conservative movement to 92% of the world?
Yeah.
What gives them that right? The Federal Trade Commission starts getting worried about monopolistic business. You don't have to be the only company in the industry to be a monopoly. They start worrying about it at 50%. That's when they start looking at it. Google's at 92. To basically to take over the rest of the world is almost impossible because it doesn't matter. Almost no one uses Bing. Almost no one uses DuckDuckGo. They're talking about 2% each or something like that. I mean, this is it's a ludicrous level of power. And the same goes for Amazon. The same goes for Facebook. They have more power than anybody can even comprehend. And so the idea of standing up to them, which is what's supposed to happen at this hearing, and in general, is almost impossible. And they can rain cash on anybody so much so that how do you stand up to that? That's when companies get too big and too powerful. When railroads did, that we reined them in. You know, when Ma Bell got too big, it got chopped down to size. And that's what, obviously, I mean, it's impossible to argue otherwise here.
You know, Mike Davis has a great article on this that came out July 25th about this upcoming, now will be passed, committee hearing in the U.S. House Judiciary Antitrust Subcommittee. And he claims in this that under the Obama administration, the FTC really became, captive to Google and to the other big tech lobbyists and just didn't do anything. And he said they're still not doing anything. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I would say they're not. I mean, part of the problem here is, as a conservative, I still reflexively want to be pro-business. I mean, these are major engines of the U.S. economy. Big tech has been a big, power of American business. So you want to be careful. You don't want to just... You know, that people talk about ending Section 230. Well, and if we got rid of Section 230, Facebook and Twitter would cease to exist because they would enable everybody to sue about any content that's placed on platforms. So we've got to, it's not something, these are not problems that you solve with dropping a nuclear bomb on them. They're, problems that we need to solve. Otherwise, the big tech companies are the superpowers, they're, instead of government being the big censor of our lives, we just outsource it to private industry, and big tech is the global censor of our lives.
We talked about, I would say now we've advanced to the point, Dan, where this is really honestly becoming life and death. Now, we could talk about this upcoming election. We both know that they, big social media, Amazon, all of them, they hate the president, and they're doing everything they can to stop information flow to people so that they know they can't advertise rallies and meetings. And there's always a reason. And now, of course, it's gotten very personal to the American Family Association because we had a very blatant death threat from a man in Florida who said he was going to go to a headquarters and kill every single person who runs your group. You are the most disgusting people in America. I've put together a group to have you pieces of blank obliterated into dust. I mean, literally killing all of you. You people are nothing but disgusting. And so we appealed. That was posted on Facebook twice, two different messages. Facebook refused to do anything. They said it didn't breach their community standards. That's serious, Dan. Very serious.
I mean, and speaking as somebody who, because I had to file a police report once because somebody threatened me about something I wrote for Fox. It's very difficult to get stuff like that taken down, but that's a very obvious violation of Facebook's policies. 100% obvious violation of Facebook's policies. Very clearly written so that they can restrict policies and stuff like that. But the problem is you've got liberals at every level of Facebook both writing the policies and then interpreting the policies and ruling on the policies. So you can't get a fair hearing. And, this idea that, this is a real-life threat. For people don't remember, we had a lunatic inspired by the Southern Poverty Law Center's website go into the Family Research Council and shoot someone, brought a bunch of Chick-fil-A with the plan to gather everybody together, shoot a large number of people. This is a real serious threat to every conservative organization. You've got these lunatics out there that are pushed by the left, encouraged by the major media, and you know that this can happen is utterly insane.
Yeah, and it's very dangerous. And of course, Facebook is cooperating with this.
Here's the best part: they can't be sued about it because the way the law is written, this is Section 230 of the Communications Decency Act. It was written in such a way to basically protect companies from lawsuit of stuff that people post on their websites. What Senator Hawley, is talking about is allowing people to sue if the companies don't obey their own rules. And so in this particular case, this would enable you to sue because Facebook's not obeying their own rules. I've read their thousands of words of content regulation, and it is an incredibly ridiculous violation of the rules.
All right, well, we're out of time, but I guess the point is for all of us, this is a dangerous time, and they must be held accountable. And by the time this airs, we should know what happened on Wednesday. That's not the last. It's just part of an ongoing conversation. But we need our public, the people that serve us and represent us in D.C. to do something about this, or there will be more, there will be just, I guess, hell to pay would be the good way to put it. Thank you so much, Dan, for joining me. Dan, again, with Media Research Center. You are a treasure, and we thank you for your time today. Sandy Rios in the Morning on AFR Talk. We'll be right back.